My guest today is Keith Peters. You may know him as Bit101. If you Google Bit101, you'll find all of his stuff. He's written 9 books that I could find on Amazon, maybe more.
I think it's probably up around 15, but sure.
15? Yeah. Which blows my mind. I've made it through one chapter of my own book and then gave up. So 15 books. Yeah. He created Gift Loop Coder, has a video series on coding math on YouTube. He's created lessons with us on Egghead, and has created many wonderful experiments throughout the year. So Keith, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I just have to throw out my opening question. What is a multi-trochoid?
Yeah, I guess I had mentioned that on Twitter the other day. So a trochoid is basically if you take a circle and roll it around something, and you've played with a spirograph before, right?
Yeah.
That's basically a trochoid. You take a circle and roll it around another circle and trace the path it makes, and you get all these kind of weird spirals, and then you have the other circle can be inside the larger circle or outside, so you get epitrochoids or hypertrochoids, and you can have circles around circles around circles, so that'd be a multi-trochoid.
Yeah, the shapes you make on those and the little videos you post they look incredible. Like, they're just fun to sit there and watch.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I'm hoping to make an interactive version soon.
Oh, cool.
Where you can actually program it and, you know, change the sizes and speeds and shapes and stuff.
Did you see like a real world machine that inspired you to do that, or did it just come?
Back in the early Flash days, there was a site called Soda Play. Soda, like soda pop.
Right, right. Yeah.
And it basically had stuff like that, that you could hook up these various engines, and I forget what exactly it did, but it left an impression.
Okay.
And so I've always wanted to do something like that, and just kind of came out in the last couple weeks.
So is that made with, I couldn't quite piece together, I saw you were talking about porting it to JavaScript, or was it originally, are you working with this stuff in Go or JavaScript?
Yeah, I'd originally written it in Go language using Cairo Graphics, which is a 2D drawing API C library that you can link to from Go, and just using that to make a series of still images that I would convert into an animated GIF. I realized that it'd be a lot funner if it were an interactive piece on the web, so I ported it all over to JavaScript.
So are you working with Go in your day-to-day job? What brought about the
No, we're not working at Go on my job, but I just, as you know, I kind of got started back in the late 90s in Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Had a nice long run on that. When Flash kind of went its way, I switched over to JavaScript for the most part. Canvas, HTML5, done that for quite a few years. And I was just looking for something different. When you're creating graphics and animations in JavaScript, it's great if you want them to be like live on the web, interactive kind of things. But if you want to save them as images or animations, you get the whole browser you're working through, and it can be a big pain in the neck.
Right.
So I was looking for other just, you know, languages that you could compile and run stuff locally on your machine. It could save a file directly to the machine. It could run other tools if it needs to do that. So.
Gotcha.
I played with Rust a little bit. I played with Python, and then I got into Go and just really started liking it.
Cool. So you mentioned that you started in the late 90s. Now, if I had to guess, I'd say you're probably the person who has the most experiments on the web in the world. I tried to like look back through the history of Bit101, and I think it went back 17 years or something. And for a long time, you were doing daily little experiments and balls bouncing around and physics and triangles spinning. And I think we've all been through the arrow phase where arrows would follow things or whatever.
Mouse chasers.
Yeah, mouse chasers and on and on and on. How do you keep coming up with all these ideas? How do you keep that kind of passion alive to keep on experimenting? I think there's quite a few people like myself who used to play and kind of lost the lost the drive or motivation to play and just kind of have a humdrum, doldrum life now. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely have had slumps throughout the years, particularly, like I said, when Flash kind of ended. And yeah. I switched over to JavaScript and was doing things in Canvas, and then kind of realized that everything I was doing, I was just recreating stuff that I had done in Flash years ago, and
yeah,
kind of went through a slump from that for a while. But you know, I'm always looking at other people's work, and a lot of what I do too is I just kind of troll Wikipedia or Wolfram, the math site, and you know, just kind of look at different formulas and shapes and curves and stuff, and you see, wow, that looks really cool. I wonder if I could implement that formula in code. And then usually it's pretty doable. And then a lot of it's like combining different techniques for me. Yeah. You know, like you have a Perlin noise flow or something, and then, okay, well, everyone has done, you know, drawing a bunch of lines based on the Perlin noise flow. It gets kind of boring. Or circle packing. So there's all these like kind of canned techniques, but if you start taking a little bit of this and combining it with a little bit of that, you kind of wind up doing something that maybe nobody else has ever done before. And the results can be really surprising. And that sometimes that just kicks off a whole chain of ideas that keeps me going for a few weeks.
It's funny how concepts like even sine and cosine are boring, but once you start moving a dot along it and it's animated and things start spinning along it, you're like, hey, this is visually interesting and even educational sometimes. So you mentioned there's a few people out there who you follow. Is there anyone you can recommend that?
I don't know. I have a list. I started using Twitter lists, and I have this generative art list that I use. I don't even know how to say some of the names, but Matt Des something.
Do you know the name of the list by chance?
I just call it Gen Art. It's my own list.
Okay.
So I can give you a link later if you want to throw it up there.
Yeah, cool. We'll put it in the...
You know, Mario Klingerman, Matt Desloriers. That's what it is. A bunch of other people, though.
Yeah, and they're making careers out of some of this stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've never gotten to it so deeply where I, like, start, you know, doing shows and stuff like that.
Right, that... Have you put stuff to music before, like some of these others have?
A little bit. Experimented with that. Nothing that I've really put out there, though.
So I see you sharing your work on Mastodon, a fairly recent transition. I don't know whether that was over the fidelity or quality differences of what you could share. Or...
I don't know what happened. Like, I guess something happened. There was like some kind of protest or quit Twitter day or something a few weeks back. I wasn't really aware of it, but I noticed suddenly everyone started jumping back on the Mastodon wagon,
right?
Which I had signed up for like a year or two ago or whatever and kind of forgotten about. But yeah, I just kind of, a lot of people seem to be more active on there, so I started checking that out as well. But yeah, they do better on the quality. If you post a GIF on Twitter, they compress the hell out of it.
Right. So I know you've been into knife making and woodworking. I know Joel has bought some of your knives before. Is that something you're still doing? Do you find that that's a, like, can you help us geeks who have hobbies of coding? We do code, and our hobbies are code. Like, how do we get into these other non-coding hobbies?
Yeah, I'm not actively doing that, but I do have all the stuff, and I'm sure I'll get back into it at some point. Actually, the way that all started was I wanted to make an arcade machine, you know, like the old retro arcades.
Okay, yeah.
And I had no idea how to do that, so I started learning some woodworking stuff, and I bought some power tools and stuff, and wasn't really feeling that. And then I learned about hand tool woodworking, which is just like, you know, hand planes and, you know, hand saws, you know, no electricity or anything, and that kind of really intrigued me. So I started buying all these like old tools, you know, off flea markets and eBay and stuff like that. It's really cool, like collecting these things and restoring them. And one of the pieces I needed a little metal blade on this particular plane. It was missing. So I just realized that I could
can
buy a piece of steel and grind it, file it into the right shape. And then I learned how to harden it, you know, by heating it up and then quenching it. And that was pretty cool. And I said, wow, this is actually, these are all the steps you need to make a knife. So I bought a couple books, learned how to make knives, and did that for a year, year and a half. That was really fun.
That's fascinating.
Then I got into blacksmithing for a little while. I took some courses on that. That was a blast.
Did you make any swords or morning stars or what did you?
No, that was just more decorative stuff. I think one of the coolest things I made was these bottle openers. That, you know, it's like a dragon and the you know, his mouth is the bottle opener. So those are really fun to make and they look cool.
Oh, cool.
Made a bunch of them, gave them away as Christmas gifts a couple years ago.
Did you ever get around to that arcade finishing that?
I never did. It sits unfulfilled.
I guess its job was to inspire you to do something different. Kind of like I went to college for an English degree and that inspired me to not do that. Have you found any crossover between the working with your hands and building things and building things in code?
Oh, totally. Yeah. There's, it's something I thought about a lot, like just learning skills and, you know, the realization that anything is basically learnable. You know, if you just, everything's a technology, you know, like cutting a piece of wood or shaping a piece of wood or shaping a piece of metal. There's people have figured out how to do that. And there's a technology for that. And you can learn that and you can do it the same way with code. You know, if you want to build something, people have figured out how to build particular things in these, you know, our design patterns or our libraries and stuff like that. And people know how to do this and you can learn how to do that. The one thing I think that's really different, I think the starkest difference is when you're working physical materials, there's no undo button.
Right.
Or version control, you know, if you screw something up and cut too much off or whatever, it's, you're going to start over.
I could definitely use an undo button in the kitchen. That's one. A lot of coders I know, they talk about how cooking is a therapeutic thing for them. But I get in there, it just stresses me out because I know I can't undo it.
Yeah.
Anything else you're working on right now that you should look forward to?
I've got at least a couple books like that I'm thinking about doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a few years ago, I self-published a book on coding fractals and tractors and stuff in JavaScript.
Where can someone buy that if they're interested?
It's on Amazon. It's called Playing with Chaos. It's an Amazon Kindle book, but it's also on Gumroad.
Yeah.
If you buy it on Gumroad, you get like three versions DRM free. So I think it's cheaper too. So that's what I would go for. There's also the website actually has all this playingwithchaos.net.
Okay.
Cool. But I had some other ideas like for doing curves. Like I started, you know, actually getting back to the trochoids, bringing it back full circle, as it were. there's all these.
Can't just drop that level of pun and keep going. Are you kidding me? That was incredible. I am bowing down right now to that pun. That was
I did not even plan that.
That I'm like reeling here. That was amazing.
That was good. All right. Sometimes the universe just works out. Anyway, there's all these different curves and spirals and sine waves. And I just started cataloging all these cool curves you can create with code. And there's a whole bunch and they're really fun to code. So I probably started this project about four times. And so maybe someday I'll actually get a book out the door on it.
Do you have any advice for someone who's looking to write a book? I mean, you have the... you have the experience, and I know many people have tried and few have succeeded.
Yeah. Well, you know, a little while ago, I would have said, you know, self-publishing is the way to go because it's, you know, when I first started writing, that wasn't a real option. You really needed a publisher to get your stuff out there. And now with eBooks and Kindle and everything else, so many different publishing platforms, it's really the business of publishing and self-publishing is really easy, but actually getting a book done by yourself with no one emailing you every other day saying, where's chapter three? You're yeah. late. Yeah. That's really hard. And plus the, you know, you get the editor and the copy reviews and the code reviews and the artwork and the layout and all that stuff. So if you can get right. a publisher to work with you, you know, people like to complain about publishers, but they do provide a lot, you know, the marketing and all that.
Right.
Getting it out there, pushing it and getting the sales.
So is that the key? You take the advance and then you got the pressure?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you think you can do it and you're willing right. to wear all those hats, then self-publishing is great as well. Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't throw away the publisher idea because publishers are evil or something. They actually provide a lot of value.
Right. Yeah. I have a few friends who want to work on their own projects and they hire a coach, or for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And that coach tells them what they already know.
Right.
But they give them that pressure. Like, I'm paying this person to make me do things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, huh, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. On the Playing with Chaos book, I did hire a copy editor just to, like, you know, double check. I think my grammar is pretty good, but so I hired a person and she went through and a fair amount of stuff that I wouldn't have got. So it was worth it.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we can wrap it up there. That was a wonderful conversation.
Great.
Thanks for your time today, Keith.